In this hour of Focus, we'll be talking about Haiti, and we have with us a scholar who has been writing about Haiti for a long, long time. His name is Patrick Bellegarde-Smith. He is now associate professor in the Department of Africology at the University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee, and he has written extensively on issues of Haitian cultural and national identity, Haitian social thought and philosophy, and also the Vodou religion. He is Haitian himself, and has a number of books to his credit. One that has just come out, in a sense, again, in a revised edition, is titled Haiti, the Breached Citadel, published by the Canadian Scholars Press. Also has a new book that is not quite out yet, but is being published by the University of Illinois Press and others. So if you're interested in reading on Haiti, you can certainly go to the bookstore, go to the library, and look for his work. He's here visiting the campus. We'll be giving a talk this afternoon and was good enough to come and spend some time with us. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
At the beginning of this year, people in Haiti marked the 200th anniversary of their country's independence. And it seemed at the same time, though, if you looked at conditions in the country then, the fact that it continues to be the poorest in the hemisphere, the economy is not good and seems to get worse all the time. Just this past a few months ago, the country was really devastated by a hurricane. And when you look at all of the unrest that has happened, including the fact that there at the end of February, the country's first democratically elected president, Mr. Aristide, was forced out of the country, doesn't seem to be very much to celebrate. Can one find something to grab onto?
Yes. If one understands the sweep of Haitian history, there is a great deal to commemorate. I don't know about celebration at this point. But you see, the Haitian context tells us something very helpful in terms of the world at large, because it is very much connected to the rest of the world. Of course, Haiti, when it was a French colony, the French colony of Saint-Domingue, was the richest colony in the history of the world. It was far more significant economically than the 13 British colonies put together. It was more important than all of South America put together. Port-au-Prince was a much more resplendent city than New York City at the time. Of course, we have the intervening 200 years, and things got increasingly worse after 1957. But before that, we were managing. But the wealth created in Haiti never stayed in Haiti. All of it, absolutely all of it, went to France. And this is what gives France its position today in the world.
Mm-hmm. One of the, I guess so many different directions I could go from there, but I guess I'm thinking of one of the things that President Aristide was talking about when he was still president, and that was reparations.
Yes.
That he felt that that the French owed Haiti just because of the very thing that you,
yes,
that you point to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For instance, the devastation of the last hurricane in the city of Gonaïves, for instance, the city I know well, was due largely to the erosion from the mountains and the lack of tree cover, which we used to have, of course. And the people who started the erosion of the soils were the French colonists, the French slave owners more than 200 years ago when they took the country in 1697. Not only has France ravaged that part of the world, but the Haitians, in order to gain recognition, political, diplomatic recognition from France, agreed to pay 150 million francs to the former slave owners, slaves paying the former slave owners 150 million francs in order to gain French recognition, in order to get U.S. recognition. Did not happen. But we thought that if French recognized our independence, which they did finally in 1838, the U.S. would follow suit. It did not do so until 1862 with President Lincoln.
Well, what do you think of the likelihood of such a thing happening?
It's going to take a very long time. Africa is on board. African Americans are on board. Many of the individuals in the Jewish community in the United States and around the world who have gained reparations for the horrible events of World War II have said to African Americans, our thing is done. We are here to help you at 100%. So it's going to happen, but it's just going to take a very long time.
Mm-hmm. In recent years, it seems the story of Haiti, at least when you look at of what's in the popular press, there's been a good deal of coverage about political unrest and the struggle between, roughly speaking, the struggle between supporters of Mr. Aristide and opponents of Mr. Aristide. That makes it sound like a fairly simple, we've mm-hmm. got two groups of people and they have competing agendas and they can't find some way to get them together. And I am certain that that is a vast oversimplification of Haitian politics.
Yes, it is.
And what's really going on. How can we better understand what really has been going on?
President Aristide had overwhelming support. He was elected twice to the presidency by overwhelming support, winning in every district of the country. And now he has lost a great deal of support. There is still some of it, some residual support, of course. And all of it is not entirely of his fault, actually. But the opposition came from interesting sources. The U.S. was absolutely opposed to him. The Roman Catholic Church Episcopate was absolutely opposed to him. The business sector, the industrial sector, all the people that matter, the top 1% of Haitian society, the top 1% were absolutely opposed to him, except for the intellectuals. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, he had total control of the country in terms of that support. Of course, over time, this has diminished a great deal because he was hemmed in by a number of things. His lack of sophistication, I think, in the political arena did him in, but also because he got no support. Haiti had been promised billions of dollars from the part of the United States, the European Union, and other sources. None of it ever materialized. Because those donors wanted to exact the pound of flesh, and it was unacceptable to the Haitian government, and therefore there was nothing to do anything with in terms of funding.
Mm. Well, it certainly seemed at one time the United States was supporting Mr. Aristide. During the he was elected president. He didn't serve very long. There was a military coup. He lived
in fall by the United States.
Well, and yet then he lived in the United States. It seemed the United States was supporting him. The United States used some military force to put him back. But, of course, by the time he got back, the term was almost up, and then he had to sit out. And then when he got reelected, there were questions about the legitimacy of the election.
That's not what happened.
That's really not
no,
what happened.
Absolutely not. That's not what happened. Okay. He was elected with the strong strong animosity from the part of the United States. He got in. The U.S. could not live with him. The general staff of the Haitian army were actually spies for the United States from the time they were lieutenants and they had become generals. They were paid for that coup. There were approximately $7 million collected from Haitian businessmen with tremendous support from the Haitian, from the U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince. 7 months after he came in, he was booted out. The directive was to have him murdered. The French ambassador saved his life. So for a couple of weeks, France and the U.S. were not on speaking terms because France had foiled the United States what it intended to do. So it goes into exile. Papa Bush leaves office. Bill Clinton comes in. Decides that this is a new day. We're going to bring him back because Haitians will have none of this, none of this. And, of course, we had the boogaboo of Haitian boat people. Mm-hmm. And one remembers what happened to Jimmy Carter with the Marielitos out of Cuba in the 1980s. So we could not afford that, especially in terms of Florida. So we bring him in after we have, of course, extracted from him a number of concessions, which he had to do. Why was he in the U.S.? He was not in the U.S. He was in Venezuela. And based on my knowledge of Haitian politics, both based on the conversations I had with the Haitian leadership, the cabinet members, many of whom went to school with me, the U.S. would have him killed in the streets of Caracas. That's why he came to the U.S., because we will not murder a foreign leader in the streets of Washington, D.C. We tried it once with Orlando Letelier. It did not work. It was messy, literally and figuratively. So he moved here in order not to get killed. So moved the Haitian, in the Haitian embassy in Washington, he moved his entire cabinet, and they're in his government in exile. But his rooms were bugged. in the American government was passing on to the Haitian generals every conversation that he had in his apartments in Washington, D.C. He was brought back and completed his term and came back. But by that time, we have Baby Bush, not Papa Bush, but Baby Bush, who wants to finish the job that his father never completed. And the second overthrow occurs at the urging of the American government.
And what now? And what Mr. Aristide has said of what happened in this past February, he said that he was forced out by the United States.
I think so.
You think that that's
absolutely
true?
Absolutely. I don't think there's a single Haitian who doesn't believe that among the 8 million of us. Certainly, he had lost tremendous popular support in the countryside, where his support was the strongest, in the urban slums, of which we have many. He had lost a great deal of support there. But I also remember what people were saying when he came to power in February of 1991. People in the streets dancing and being joyful about it were saying at the same time, I overheard it because I went home to see this. People were saying, we put him there. If he doesn't do what needs to be done, we'll take him out. And those were peasants and rural urban people saying that. And in fact, he was unable to produce much in terms of the country. And so it was time for him to go. And he had strong opposition from the elites, certainly. He always had that. And he always had strong opposition from the part of the United States. He was not privatizing enough. Everything that brought money to the Haitian treasury had to be privatized. That was the demand of the IMF, of the World Bank, and of the American government. And he dragged his feet. So we didn't like that. And the Haitians did not want privatization of these institutions that were bringing money into the Haitian coffers.
Yeah. He's not living in South Africa. Is he still – certainly there are people in Haiti who would say that they're supporters of his. Is he still playing some sort of role? Does he have some influence in Haitian politics now, even though he is a long way away?
Oh, yes. He has a role, and he has a role to play. Now, whether or not he ever comes back is a different story. I don't think he should, quite frankly. His time has passed. I don't see who else will replace him because the government that we have in power right now, selected by the United States, essentially, from top to bottom, is not doing a good job. They are bureaucrats. With all the ministries that President Aristide has had in terms of his two administrations, I knew pretty much everybody in cabinet positions. With the new group in power, I know none of them. Most of them have been outside of Haiti, working for international organizations, and they are gray bureaucrats, as it were, and with no track record in terms of the country, and not in touch with Haitian realities because they've lived in Miami and elsewhere.
I should introduce again our guest for anyone who has just tuned in or in the last few minutes. We're speaking with Dr. Patrick Bellegarde-Smith. He is professor in the Department of Africology at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and has written extensively on Haitian culture and politics. Among his books, Haiti, the Breached Citadel. And there's a new book that's coming out from the University of Illinois Press. It has to do with the first Haitian – well – Was he in fact a saint, or was it just he was proposed to be a saint?
Pierre Toussaint. The press selected that passage for my introduction, and I think it's not this passage they should have selected, quite frankly, because Pierre Toussaint was an enslaved African born in Haiti. Towards the Haitian Revolution, he was yanked out of there by his French slave owner and his family when the French fled the country. Pretty much all of them fled the country and came to New Orleans and Philadelphia and New York City and elsewhere. And he remained a slave in New York City and seemed to have enjoyed the fact that he was a slave. And Pope John Paul II argued that he is and should be a role model for young African-American boys. And, of course, I disagree violently with that assumption. And he was supposed to become a saint in 1992 to celebrate, and there is nothing to celebrate about this. The Christopher Columbus arrival in a new world, which Haitians resent, actually. And but it's not happened because there was strong opposition by African Americans, strong opposition to making this guy a saint. They said it's exactly the wrong message to send to the African American community. So it can't happen. It's not happened politically. The Pope has been stymied in his effort.
Questions are also welcome here on the program, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Also, I do indeed also want to mention that our guest, Dr. Patrick Bellegarde-Smith, will be giving a talk, The Significance and Contemporary Reverberations of the 1804 Haitian Revolution. That's in Gregory Hall this afternoon at 2 o'clock. And this is sponsored by the African American Studies and Research Program. And I'm sure that anyone who is interested in attending and hearing more from him should feel welcome. You brought some music with you, and
yes.
I'm not quite sure how best to integrate that into the conversation. You selected a few things that we might play.
Well, I brought in with me four CDs of wildly different kinds of music in Haiti. There are more than four kinds, but I travel with these because wherever I travel around the world, West Africa, Brazil, Cuba, I always end up on the radio or television. So I travel with my flag, and I travel with the music. And in the Caribbean context, music is extremely significant because we're talking about an oral tradition. There is politics always involved in this, and it matters a great deal to us. And so music is our lifeline, as it were, and allows us to survive as well as we can.
Yeah. Well, tell us with the first selection, what do we hear?
The first cut is actually a very unusual kind of thing, because it is. I'm thinking in terms of Heitor Villa-Lobos in Brazil. I'm thinking in terms of George Gershwin. It's the making into art song something that comes from the traditional arena, and so there is a cut from that I have selected, and then it gets increasingly more traditional, increasingly more real, as it were.
All right.
Soleil fin coucher, garde na travail. Mais tout moun, c'est même maître là qui crée. Mais pour qui ça nous pas cap gain liberté?
So tell us, what is the singer singing about?
Well, the singer, and she's transformed traditional songs into an artistic kind of creation, is singing about one of the major deities in the Vodou pantheon, Dambala Wedo, who is also a major deity in former Dahomey, now Benin, in West Africa. And she is begging Papa Dambala, Dambala Wedo, to lead us to freedom. This is what the country needs most. And it's really interesting because with the abject poverty that exists in the country, the grievances of the people have not been couched in economic terms, but in political terms, every single time. The country is extremely aware politically, so that when Aristide was overthrown in September of 1991, for instance, there were 5,000 people murdered in a population of 800,000. I did the calculation. It's in the book somewhere. I don't remember exactly what it would amount to in U.S. terms. 885 million, 5,000 out of 8 million. It's in the hundreds of thousands. And some of these people are, the names were given by the U.S. Embassy in Haiti. Get rid of these people. And these people were the organizers of the urban, of the rural peasantry, which was very interesting. Peasants themselves. Peasants themselves.
There is one of the facts of life in Haiti is that there is an extreme divide between the wealthy and the poor, and that the wealthy people are not only is there a huge divide, they're a very small, they're just tiny slice of people who are very wealthy. And
I'm part of that group. My color tells you I'm part of that group.
Well, is the story of Haiti really about, is it about social class? I mean, is that really the thing that perpetuates?
There is a class divide in Haiti that's been very, very brutal, has existed under the French during the colonial period. And this is largely my speech this afternoon, because there was a hiatus provided by the Haitian Revolution, which was the first real revolution in the Americas. I've never argued that 1776 was a revolution. I don't argue that. The Haitian Revolution was, followed later on by the Mexican Revolution of 1910, and then we have to wait all the way to 1959 with the Cuban Revolution. That was a real revolution again. It is about social class. It is also about color. It is also indicating a huge cultural divide between the Franco-Haitians and the Afro-Haitians. And the people I grew up with were part of the Franco-Haitian group. My family had been in control pretty much for 200 years in that country. No longer speak to me because I have aligned myself with the Afro-Haitian group. And it is known when the military, when the generals took over, they sent me a message saying, if you come back home, we will have you killed. So I stayed away until 1995.
And does the support for President Aristide break down along those same lines? Are
yes.
his supporters the Afro-Haitians
yes.
and his
yes.
opponents are the Franco-Haitians?
That's right.
Haitians?
And the Franco-Haitians, well, certainly the upper class, the elite, is less than 1% of the population. And in fact, my very first work in terms of Haitian scholarship was to study the philosophy of that group in Haiti because they were in power and they'd been in power for 200 years. They're back in power now. And then I realized, well, if I'm looking into the future, into a crystal ball, the philosophy that came out of the upper class and the upper middle class is not sufficient to understand the country. So I have devoted the rest of my academic career to studying Vaudou because it provides us with the paradigm in terms of what may occur if these people were in charge of their country. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they will ever become in charge, but at least one can hope. And because the Vodou religion is a spiritual system, it's an intellectual system, it encompasses absolutely everything. So it gives you a clue about what happens. And indeed, Papa Bush, George Bush Sr., had it right when he said, well, to a certain extent, when he criticized candidate Ronald Reagan and said, he's talking about voodoo economics. Voodoo economics does exist. It's called cooperative economics. It is a communal effort, and it's very strong in the countryside. People survive because of it. Everybody helps everybody else. You have nothing. You find the means to help your neighbor, literally, because it happens today. There is voodoo politics. It does exist. It's called consensual politics. It's the village idea in West Africa. And there is voodoo philosophy. That's called humanism. It's all there, and it's not quite intact because the Roman Catholic Church and the Protestant missions sent by the United States government in 1915 in terms of the first U.S. invasion of that country was an attempt to divorce Haitians from their roots, and it succeeded to a certain extent. But the majority of the population still practiced their ancestral faith. When I played part of a recording live on Radio Nationale du Bénin in Benin, West Africa, people in the radio station were crying. Men, grown men were crying because they recognized those rhythms. They recognized the song. They said, "You still do it after 400 years?" I said, "Yes, we do." In fact, probably what we should do is play a cut from that, and that's the fourth CD, the last one.
Okay. We'll take a moment to get that ready to go. And we do have another caller here. We'll also get worked into the conversation. And, again, probably I should reintroduce our guest, Dr. Patrick Bellegarde-Smith. He's a Haitian scholar. He's written a lot about Haitian history, politics, culture. He's taught courses on black cultures in Latin America and the Caribbean. Black political movements. He's authored a number of books and is here visiting. We'll talk about the Haitian Revolution in a talk this afternoon at 2 on the U of I campus. And that's in 213 Gregory Hall, and anybody who's interested should stop by. Now, tell us again now, what's it that we'll be hearing?
Now, this is unadulterated music that comes from the ritual, from the ceremonies of the Vodou religion. And so it sort of connects in terms of everything that is Haitian. But that is at the foundation, and 90% of Haitians are practitioners. 90%, even if they are practicing Catholics and practicing Protestants, they still do this. It is the connection with the ancestral line.
All right.
Bila les bouda fache ko chita exilio bral rele prend exili ma piano bral rele prend mwen gen un loi ki danse nan tèt mwen jouti lè konnen noni ma fè ou kadou
Again, you'll have to help us. What is the singer singing?
Well, actually, the very first words in terms of that cut, we call upon God before we pray. We pray at the feet of the spirits of Guinea, Afrique Guinée. Afrique Guinée represents all of Africa. It's a mystical Africa. It's when the Jews say next year in Jerusalem, it is a mystical Jerusalem. It's not the actual Jerusalem. Well, the Haitians do something very similar. in Africa, Haitian voodoo and all African religions are monotheistic, all of them. However, there is not a single prayer addressed to God itself. God is far removed from the affairs of humankind. It is the kind of deist position that Thomas Jefferson had, very much that kind of deist position. And it is reflected all the way to the 16th president with Abe Lincoln, who believed in reincarnation, which is interesting, which is a constant in most religious faiths around the globe, not here, but elsewhere. But we call upon God, and then we're going to pray, not to him, actually not to it, but to the spirits of Guinea. And what the Haitians do in the ritual, we start with Roman Catholic prayers. We also honor the spirits of the deceased Native Americans, 1 million of whom were murdered within 50 years of the occupation by Spain of the island of Hispaniola. There were 500 left 50 years into the colonization. About 1 million may have perished. Well, one doesn't know exactly how many, but there were quite a few. Mm-hmm. They've disappeared. So one recognizes that Haitians are not really of Haiti. They are Africans. And upon death, their souls, through the ocean, goes back home.
Our guest, Dr. Patrick Bellegarde-Smith, he's a Haitian scholar, has written extensively on Haitian culture, religion, politics, and is the editor of a couple of books. If you're interested in reading more on the subject, you might look for The Spirit, the Myth, the Reality, Vodou and Haitian Development. And then this is the book that's going to be published by the U of I Press, Fragments of Bone.
No, that's Indiana University Press.
Oh, okay.
And that will be in late 2005.
Fragments of Bone, Neo-African Religions in the New World. Very good. And also you might look for his book, Haiti, the Breached Citadel, which has been out now for a number of years and now is out in a revised and updated edition. So if you're interested in reading on Haiti, these are places that you could start. And questions here are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a caller here locally with us in Champaign County on line number one. Hello.
Good morning. I don't want to get into this, but it sounded very much like invocation to Ogun and... to call it monotheist, I don't know. I don't want to get into that part of it. If there's time, maybe we can. But what I called about was La Valance Party, if you see no role specifically for Aristide. What about the party, which it's a pretty much unreported story here of the slaughter of these people by the thugs that came in at the U.S. behest. But the other thing... the animus from the Catholic Church against Aristide, not just that he left his priesthood, but he authorized voodoo officially. And I think that bothered a lot of people, not just in Rome, but also, the oligarchy there, but also I think there's an underpinning here in this country. And I'm referring to the religious right again, and there's a lot of stuff that we don't know about what's going on in those circles, but I think there's a lot of political animus from the religious right in this country against Aristide for things like that. I don't know if you feel comfortable about commenting on that.
Well, there are about 17 questions implied
right
in your comment. It was not an invocation to Ogu.
Okay.
It was far from it. The very first words in terms of that piece that we heard is to Grand Maître, the great master, God, although no prayers in the entire continent of Africa and in Haiti are ever addressed to God itself. It's not an animist religion. It's a monotheistic religion. The closest thing that comes to it in terms of our Western understanding would be, for instance, and from Judaism into Christianity, would be to think in terms of the angels, archangels, cherubim, and seraphim, and cherubim. Those would be the closest in terms of the lua, the Haitian spirits that are African spirits, essentially. Aristide did not...
As long as you started on that, but you're sort of saying this is a corrective to a misapprehension, because the common apprehension is that both African and voodoo have many, many gods. You're just saying they're manifestations or something.
They're manifestation of one god. It is the this has been propagated especially by Hollywood and by American academics. But you see, many of us are working very hard, and in fact, there are Voodoo courses offered throughout the universities in the United States. And this is something that we have had to fight against, because what we think of Voodoo has nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with the reality. In terms of Lavalas, it is the best, the most organized political formation in Haiti today, even after the departure of Aristide. So it will have to be part of any political framework to resolve the situation as it presently exists and in the future. One cannot get away from that. Aristide still has support in critical areas of the society. By the way, he did not officialize Voodoo at all. Voodoo has been the national religion of Haiti for the better part of 400 years. So it was discriminated against by the upper class elite that did practice it, but in hiding, such as people in my family. Everybody practiced it in hiding. Everybody speaks Creole, although some of us pretended we did not know it. We only spoke French. I speak French better than most French people do, because I speak it grammatically. But the Haitian language is my language, and it was the universal language in the country, ahead of French in France proper in the 18th and 19th century.
Well, there's a misapprehension about what he did about voodoo, too, because I can't remember the name of the woman Haitian writer, something about Dew. The host knows, because
Edwige Dandika.
Yeah, she confirmed. She suggested that there was some kind of normalization of voodoo. Maybe I don't know. As you say, whether it was official or not, it was always suppressed. What about the dimension here? Do you know anything about missionary types and religious right as having, and the Catholic Church too, I think,
yes,
is part of the, if it wasn't official, it was at least in some way normalized, made official, it was at least in some way elevated in some fashion.
No, it was not elevated. Voodoo has been Haitian. It's been around for 400 years. It's not been officialized. What happened in the 1987 Constitution is that the Roman Catholic Church, as the official church of the state of Haiti, was demoted, and all religions given equal access, including Protestantism. The Protestant Church was introduced by the U.S. Marine Corps in 1915 with specific instructions to move Haitians away from voodoo, because the voodoo leaders were the ones leading the charge militarily against the U.S. Marine Corps. And ultimately, by the way, the Marine Corps killed 50,000 Haitians. 50,000 Haitians. Hundreds of thousands of Haitians fled to Cuba and to the Dominican Republic, and the U.S. seized their land, handing it over to American corporations and American businessmen. That's what happened. Now, Aristide was a Roman Catholic priest. Once a Roman Catholic priest, always one. You cannot get out of that, even if you're forbidden to say Mass, once you have received that. Just like a voodoo priest, always a voodoo priest. But he recognizes the absolute importance of that spiritual system for the country. The independence movement was created around it. A voodoo ceremony got the thing going. Without it, Haiti would have never become independent.
As you say, there are many, many threads in this. It seems to me that the U.S. role is just so insidious. It has been for so long, and it continues to be. It's hard for me to remain calm when I think about it. But as far as that history from the Marines' occupation, which was several different times in the 30s and the teens, there's the famous mea culpa by Smedley Butler, who was involved in some of that activity. It might be something for a history buff to look at. All right, thank you.
All right, well, let's go to another caller here in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I was interested in the guest's thesis that the political and social destiny of the country has been determined pretty much by an elitist ruling class. And I'm from the Virgin Islands, and I've always been so curious as to the different, certainly in terms of the levels of economic viability of Santo Domingo and Haiti. And I was wondering what the guests thought was the reasons for this, the continued grind in poverty and lack of overall development in view of the fact that presumably the brightest people in the country were the ones who were guiding its destiny. I just was curious as to whether or not he had some insights as to why Haiti continues to be such a tragic story for the average Haitian.
By the way, I lived for a couple of years in St. Thomas, Virgin Islands.
I'm from Tortola.
Yes, in the British Virgin Islands.
Yes.
I was a student at the College of the Virgin Islands, which is now the University of the Virgin Islands.
Yes, I graduated from there as well.
Yes. I have kept friends in that part of the world. Well, actually, this is the interesting thing because, you see, the Haitian elites were developing as a national bourgeoisie, mm-hmm. as a national elite, a foundry. They were doing cannon and cannonballs. They had a foundry established. They were doing great until the 1880s. What do we have in the 1880s? Haiti rejoins the rest of the Caribbean, the rest of Latin America. The French come back. The British come back. The Americans are present. And the Haitian national bourgeoisie pretty much disappears. As an industrial elite, it becomes a mere commercial elite. And then we have an influx of Levantine merchants, people from Palestine, people from Syria, people from Lebanon, who have become Haitians, by the way. Many of my friends are from that group. And they come with the help and support of the United States. And at that point, Haitians used to have shipping lines. That disappears. Everything disappears to the benefit of foreign merchants, to the benefit of foreign merchants. When the Haitian upper class taking legal measures against what it felt was a disappropriation of what was in Haiti for them, the Americans intervened and said, you're not touching these individuals from the Middle East, even though they are not U.S. citizens. We support them, and we will send warships to support them, and we did.
I'm so glad you're making that point. I knew the answer, but I think you needed to be more specific. That particular scenario has been repeated in many, many countries, even in the U.S., in terms of the African-Americans who engage in enterprise here.
Yes.
I think that's a critical point. I'm so glad
that's
you
right.
were able to make it. Thank you.
All right. Let's talk again with someone else. This is a caller in Urbana. Hello.
Is this line one?
Yes. Line one.
Hello. I'm interested in what is this great difference in political problems and other problems between Haiti and the Dominican Republic, which share the same geography and so forth?
This is an excellent question. The island was colonized by the Spanish. They neglected the western part, so the French, the pirates, the buccaneers, had a foothold in that part of the world. It was transferred in the final analysis to France in 1697, and the French occupied it until, of course, the late 1700s, as Haiti was becoming independent. Soon after that, we have to recognize that at Haitian independence, the entire island was declared independent. Why? Because the French had occupied the eastern part. Spain had given it over to the French, even though the population was still Spanish and African in derivation. And because the French were coming into Haitian territory, seizing Haitians and re-enslaving them after independence, the Haitians invaded. And they occupied the Dominican Republic for a spell until 1844, when that country becomes independent. And so there is a lot of ill will from the part of Dominicans vis-à-vis Haitians, because for one thing, the white element in the Dominican Republic fled, most of which never returned there. They went to Venezuela. They went elsewhere. And so the Dominicans accused Haitians of having blackened the population, literally. One of the things the Haitians did was to emancipate all the slaves in Santo Domingo once they invaded. So the country was one country for a while. But right now the Dominicans, even though they are a mulatto and black country, and Haiti is a mulatto and black country also, have decided that they are, after all, not of African descent. They are white people, and those who are really blue-black are Native Americans, all of whom were killed hundreds of years before. But that is a way to assert the Dominican-ness vis-à-vis the Haitians.
I see. So there isn't any sign of this kind of difficulty arising in the Dominican Republic at the present time, huh?
And the Dominican Republic is doing much better economically and politically than Haiti is. There have been a number of U.S. invasions there as well. And presidents in the Dominican Republic, it can be argued, serve at the leisure of Washington, D.C., in the very same way that Haitian presidents since 1915 had served at the leisure of the American government. But they have gotten their act together. Partly because they have twice as much land as Haiti, twice as much land with the same population, and much, much better land, flat land. We are 85% mountainous.
I see. Well, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
We are coming down to the point here. We have 4 or 5 minutes left. What could the rest of the world do to help?
Essentially, leave Haiti alone. I remember something that John Paul II said on one of his numerous trips to Africa, and he kept going back. He said something very smart. He said, when left alone, Africa works. But of course, the Pope and everybody else refuses to leave Africa alone. The resource base is too strong. We need those natural resources over here. Certainly Europe does need them, et cetera, et cetera. I think Haitians must learn to live together. They have to resolve their problems alone, essentially. The upper class will have to come to grips with the fact that they are roughly 1% of the situation, of the population, and that they have to make room for others. They made room for the middle class. They made room for the middle class. But this time, the stakes are much higher. And the middle class and the upper class have joined together against the peasantry and against the urban working class.
Mm. Well, the outsiders have done a couple of things. They have promised to provide money, which pretty much has not been forthcoming. They have sent some peacekeepers, which have been unequal to the task. The intentions seem to be good, and we don't seem terribly good on the follow-through.
No. It's also interesting because Nicaragua, after the Sandinista fell from power, of course, with the assistance of the United States, were promised $125 million, or actually more, and never saw a penny of it. When Ronald Reagan in 1983 invaded the country of Grenada, they had been promised an enormous amount of money as well for startup economic development. They didn't see a penny of it. Haiti was promised billions. We never saw a penny of it. And now about one-third of what was promised in terms of peacekeepers has come to the country, led by Brazil. Chile has a contingent. Unfortunately, the French were sent there exactly 200 years after they were booted out, and that was a horrible mess. It should have never been done. I think it was done on purpose to show the Haitians that the French are back. I would have liked the Bulgarians, not the French, to have come. So it was a gratuitous insult and one that was willful from the part of the French government. And so there are not enough troops. There are not enough police officers. The Haitian army probably will come back because the U.S. wills it. That is one of the things that upset the American government greatly, Clinton by name, because Aristide got rid of the Haitian army. That was taking 60% of the national budget in a country that is 80% illiterate, in a country that has one real hospital for 8 million people. Most Haitian MDs, physicians, operate in the United States and Canada, not in Haiti. And to supplement the 600 or so physicians, Haitian physicians in the country, Cuba has had to send 800 physicians. Cuba, 800 physicians, many of whom speak Haitian Creole. Why? Because 200 years ago, a number of Haitians went to Cuba. They kept the language going. They still speak Haitian Creole, and they are Cubans.
And does the country have, I mean, let us suppose that the money that's been promised never does show up. I mean, Haiti does it have the resources on its own? So you sort of wonder, without some outside assistance, can the country really?
It's a rush to the bottom because, you see, Haiti does not have the political stability largely because it is poor. It's a rush to the bottom because it competes with other poor nations in terms of attracting assembly factories and those kinds of things for the developed countries. And you are talking in terms of, what, $3 a day if you find that job, 12 hours locked at your bench, no bathroom breaks. And women usually are the ones hired. And, of course, they have to give sexual favors to the managers to get that job in the first place. That is daily reality for those Haitians. Haitians will have to control their own development, and others need to come in and say, okay, you decide what needs to be done, and we will help you. But we will not give you, from the IMF and World Bank standpoint, the blueprint as to how to do it.
Well, we're going to have to stop because we've come to the end of the time. For people who are here on the campus in and around Champaign-Urbana, our guest, Dr. Patrick Bellegarde-Smith, will be speaking about the Haitian Revolution, and I'm sure touching on some of these subjects again this afternoon in a talk on the U of I campus in 213 Gregory Hall at 2 o'clock. African American Studies and Research Program is sponsoring his visit here. And if you're interested in reading more on Haiti, one book you might look at is his book, Haiti, the Breached Citadel, and it is published by the Canadian Scholars Press. Patrick Bellegarde-Smith is Associate Professor in the Department of Africology at University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.